This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates that relate to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today we're interviewing Michael Garrity. He's the Executive Director of the Alliance for the Wild Rockies. They're based in Helena, Montana. He's been the executive director since 2002, and he holds degrees in environmental economics. So the Alliance for Wild Rockies was founded in 1988 to meet the challenge of saving the Northern Rockies bioregion from habitat destruction. And that's what got Mike involved. It's composed of thousands of individuals, business owners, and organizations that take a bioregional approach to protect and restore the great region. Its mission is to secure the ecological integrity of the Wild Rockies bioregion. So, Mike, welcome. It's great to be talking to you today, and we need to catch up and see what's going on with AWR.
So, thank you very much for having me.
You've had a lot of court victories. I think the website says 80% of the time. That's a pretty great record.
Yeah, we win over 80% of the time. You know, it changes slightly, you know, with every court ruling, but it's averaged in the low 80s, you know, somewhere between 81 and 83%.
So what are the issues that you've been focused on recently?
Well, we focus mainly on protecting habitat for threatened species such as grizzly bear and lynx and bull trout. Because, you know, they're threatened because the Fish and Wildlife Service is concerned they're going to go extinct. So
it's principally a wildlife focus, not a land use focus?
Well, no, our mission is, as you said, is to protect the Northern Rockies ecosystem. We're trying to, in simple terms, we're trying to protect habitat for native species in the Northern Rockies, because as the ESA says, we not only have to protect the species, but we also have to protect the ecosystem upon which they depend.
So what's the position of the Alliance on hunting and trapping?
A lot of our members are hunters. We don't have any problem with hunting out in wildland. We do think hunting should be closed in areas where it affects public safety, such as Beatty Gulch, which is a natural funnel in just outside of Gardner, where buffalo
just north of Yellowstone.
And the hunters lined up right on the border of Yellowstone to shoot the buffalo right as they cross into Montana into Beatty Gulch. The problem is a hunter was shot there by another hunter 2 years ago because they're so concentrated.
Right.
And people have homes right near there where bullets have whizzed by their houses. So we want it to be closed for a public safety issue, not because we're against hunting.
Do you advocate the bison be allowed to roam into the national forest?
Well, yes, because if they're wild, they don't respect political boundaries, and they just want to go where the good habitat is, and the bison that are migrating out of the park in the spring are trying to go to lower elevation habitat, which
right.
they've been doing for a long time, so they can eat grass and have their calves, so there's not a lot of deep snow.
And do you have any hope that the National Forest is going to be open to bison roaming in its environs?
Well, you have to have the hope to have this job.
Yeah. Right.
But we also think that not only bison should be allowed to expand into national forests like the Custer-Gallatin on the north side of Yellowstone,
right.
but
right.
we think they should also, you know, they're shipping the bison out to Indian reservations, which we're fine with, but we would really like to see, you know, more wild bison. A lot, the problem with a lot of those bison shipped sent to Indian reservations, they're domesticated. They, you know, they're put in corrals and okay. Right. And but the CMR wildlife refuge in central Montana would be a perfect place for bison. There's right. very little cattle grazing there. It's over 1 million acres when combined with the wilderness areas in the area. And
CMR is just CMR is the Charles Russell Wildlife Refuge.
Charles Marion Russell National Wildlife Refuge.
Right.
And that's where Lewis and Clark saw most of the bison that were coming up to Missouri. It's in the plains along the Missouri River.
Right, right.
It's the natural habitat, but they can't migrate there on their own.
Right.
Right. They'd have to cross I-90, and it's, you know, it's just
well,
not practical.
Doesn't Montana have some regulations in regard to trucking bison?
Yeah, it's illegal. But yeah. The federal government could do it.
Oh,
the
I
federal
see.
Government owns and manages the Charles
see.
Russell Wildlife Ranch, wildlife management area, and they're trucking bison right now up to the Confederated Salish Kootenai Indian Reservation to be slaughtered or... And then they're also trucking them to Fort Peck, where they're then quarantine them for a while to make sure they don't have brucellosis, and then they ship them out from there to other Indian reservations. So they've been trucking bison for years.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no, it's against the law for the general public to do that. The federal government would have to do it.
What prevents them being trucked to the Charles M. Russell Wildlife Refuge?
Nothing. There's no law. Guess that it just would take the political will. We hoped that when Biden was president that Secretary of Interior
Haaland
would do it. And but when, you know, we tried to publicly get her to do it, but they didn't. Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. Okay, so let's move on to litigation. What's some of the litigation you've been involved in that's been successful?
Near Bozeman, we stopped a big timber sale in the Castle Mountain up near Whitehall, so about 90 miles north of Bozeman.
Right.
And then we stopped another timber sale just north of the castles in the Little Belt Mountain called... Horsefly, and we stopped a timber sale recently in the Selkirk ecosystem in the Idaho Panhandle National Forest near Priest Lake. The two most imperiled grizzly bear populations in the world are the Selkirk grizzly bears and the Kamet Yak. Because
up near the Canadian border.
Yeah, it's up near the Canadian border, and the target for recovery is having at least 100 grizzly bears, and they both have 50 or less.
Yeah,
each of them. And there's when the population gets that small, there's extreme risk of inbreeding.
Mm-hmm.
And once inbreeding sets in, they're finished. And we won the Silk Herd lawsuit because there's the forest plan amendment that limits the amount of roads in grizzly bear habitat because most grizzly bears get killed within a third of a mile of a road because it's more of a crime of opportunity. You know, people don't... It's a lot of work to hike through a forest with a big gun to kill a grizzly bear, so it's much easier if you just see a grizzly bear on a road and you have a gun to kill it that way.
I thought the grizzlies were on the endangered species list.
Yeah, they're illegal killing.
Oh, okay.
Then there's also, you know, accidental, you know, they say, oh, they thought it was a black bear. And
yeah, yeah.
Also, you know, self-defense, where they don't carry bear spray, but they carry a gun, and they come upon a grizzly bear because, you know, they'll, like, walk off a road a little ways.
What's the penalty for illegally killing a grizzly?
Well, they can be fined, and a federal judge in Missoula sent someone in the Kootenai for killing a grizzly bear to actually prison for a few months.
Uh-huh.
2 or 3 years ago, so they can go to jail, but
uh-huh.
That's the only time I've ever heard that happen. Most times, people just claim self-defense, so then there's no penalty at all.
Oh, I see.
It's legal to kill a grizzly bear if you're doing it in self-defense.
I see.
But they don't, in Montana, they don't make people carry bear spray.
Yeah.
They're out, like, hunting or hiking in grizzly bear habitat, but they, you know, they have a gun, and all the studies show that bear spray is more effective. But the main issue, again, is these logging roads they build in grizzly bear habitat, because then it just brings, you know, it makes access easier in the grizzly bear habitat, so it brings people closer to grizzly bears, and the result is more grizzly bears die.
So does the Alliance have its own attorneys, or do you bring in attorneys from the outside? How does that work?
We historically just hired attorneys from the outside, but we do have a staff attorney right now. We don't pay her very much money, essentially minimum wage. If she wins, then the government, under the Endangered Species Act, has to pay the attorneys. The winning, if someone sues the federal government, the government has to pay the attorney's fees if they win. And there's something else called the Equal Access to Justice Act that does the same thing. Because there's no, if someone, like, breaks your window or, you know, robs you, you can call the police. But if the federal government breaks the law, Congress didn't create a police force to police the federal government. They just added provision for citizen enforcement.
Yeah, right.
So if you sue the federal government and win, then the government has to pay your attorney's fees. But politicians accuse me of suing to get rich, but I'm not an attorney. So if we win, I don't make any money off that. And it just, you know, it costs us money to sue.
Right,
attorneys
yeah.
make money, but we don't. But even our own, we've had the staff attorney just for a few months. If she wins, she gets to keep all of her money that she makes.
Yeah. Do you use organizations like Earth Justice or CBD Conservation?
Earth Justice hasn't represented us ever since we successfully sued to overturn the wolf delisting in 2011 and 12.
Uh-huh.
And 2012, after we went in court and the judge ordered that wolves be return to protection of the Endangered Species Act, Senator Tester asked the big groups to give up her victory so he could get reelected, and they all agreed to, but I wouldn't agree to it. So the judge said that they couldn't settle unless all the plaintiffs agreed. So ever since then, Earth Justice won't represent the Alliance.
Do you file lawsuits anywhere other than Montana?
We file them throughout the Northern Rockies, even including Utah.
Huh?
We have a lawsuit going in Utah right now against the Manti LaSalle National Forest for their forest-wide prescribed burn. The Selkirks are in Idaho. We just talked about that.
Right.
We filed another lawsuit to stop a natural gas pipeline that they want to build through 5 inventory growth areas in southeast Idaho. And then we sued in Wyoming. I apologize, I've already mentioned that. We sued on in a grazing allotment in the Upper Green River.
Uh-huh.
And
in Wyoming.
It's basically a death trap for grizzly bears. We sued because the Fish and Wildlife Service gave the Forest Service a take to kill 72 grizzly bears over 10 years. Because when grizzly bears come out of hibernation, calves are a good fast food snack for a hungry grizzly bear. And when a grizzly bear, you know, kills cattle, then they're almost always killed.
Yeah, right. Is the Forest Service the agency that you most frequently file suits against?
It is, but we do sue the BLM, but not nearly as much as the Forest Service. The reason is most, like grizzly bear and lynx, are usually in Forest Service land. The BLM land is more focused on, you know, southern parts and eastern parts of Montana,
right,
where there's not grizzly bears and lynx, but there are species like sage grouse in Beaverhead County, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at those as possible lawsuits. We also recently sued the Fish and Wildlife Service because they manage Red Rock Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Wilderness area, and they wanted, in the Biden administration, they wanted to put in mechanical equipment to aerate some ponds or lakes there because they said that would help Arctic grayling.
Uh-huh.
And we sued along with the Gallatin Wildlife Association and Wilderness Watch, saying that violates the Wilderness Act, and we got an injunction from the federal court, and then Fish and Wildlife Service pulled their decision.
So what is it about the Forest Service that it continually invites litigation?
Well, they continually break the law, is a simple answer. But they, you know, people keep saying erroneously that, you know, the Forest Service has changed, that they're no longer the cut-and-run agency, and that's simply not true. They're as bad as they've ever been.
Is it policy or is it management?
Power.
I'm sorry.
The chair of the economics department at the University of Montana for years. That's where I went to undergraduate school and briefly in graduate school. And his contention was that the Forest Service is so overrun with what he called timber beasts that you just needed to get rid of the Forest Service and start over with a brand new agency. Because they just want to, their whole goal is to get the cutout to benefit, you know, industry.
Yeah.
Rather than take care of Forest Service land for the reason that Teddy Roosevelt created the Forest Service.
Yeah.
Because private timber companies were destroying land, so he wanted to protect these lands, so he created the Forest Service.
Well, my experience once working for the Forest Service was that they're very tuned into the forestation companies.
Well, Hank Raitt is this retired ranger from Gardner. He was ranger of the Gardner Range.
Uh-huh.
And he said that in the 50s and 60s, the Forest Service begged industry to open mills around, you know, east of the divide in Montana.
Uh-huh.
So the Forest Service would have customers to sell the logs to. And he said, you know, on the east side, that we don't get really enough precipitation that to even qualify these lands as commercial forests. They really shouldn't be logged commercially.
Yeah, right.
Trees take so long to grow here.
Well, let's talk about a particular case. I think on the website I picked up, you have a case against Pinter Fair, or what's
it's
Pinter
Fair? It's called Pinter Fair.
Yeah.
It's Pinter Face is on the south side of the continental divide when it, where it runs, the north side is the Anaconda Pentland Wilderness. The south side is in the Big Hole Valley, and it's linked in grizzly bear habitat. And what we stood on there is the Forest Service designates lynx habitat based on the size of a female lynx home range. How much a female lynx can ranges is called the lynx analysis unit. And so they've broken up the forest into various different lynx analysis units. And what the Beaver Head Deer Lodge Forest did is they decided, well, that was hampering their logging, so they secretly eliminated 1.1 million acres of lynx analysis units so they could log more without ever telling the public, and that violates the National Environmental Policy Act. And so we sued on that, and the judge ruled it in our favor, but because our attorneys were so busy, it took them a long time to sue, and the logging had already started, and the judge just said, well, you waited too long to sue, so I'm going to rule in your favor, but I'm not going to stop the logging. And then the owner of the timber mill that bought the trees, his lawyer said in court that if he stopped the logging in the timber mill, Sun Mountain Logging would go out of business. Which, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that a timber mill would stake their whole business on one timber sale. Because timber sales can be stopped for an infinite amount of reasons, from fires or just, you know, the weather. If the ground is too soft, they have to stop logging so they don't destroy the soils. But after the hearing, I drove from Missoula back to Helena, and I saw all these logging trucks. I get off the interstate at Garrison and get on Highway 12 to come to Helena, and I counted five big logging trucks pulling trailers headed toward Deer Lodge. And I just, right before you called me, I was talking to a logger who was complaining about all the fraud they were doing, but he didn't have any proof for that. But he just wasn't happy with his business, but I can't accuse him of fraud because I don't have any proof of that.
Yeah. Is there a difference in the forests depending upon who the supervisor is?
No, I work with Sarah Johnson with Native Ecosystems Castle. They're based out of Willow Creek, you know, in the Gallatin Valley, and she was a wildlife biologist for the Forest Service, first for the Targhee and then the Gallatin for 14 years. And when she was in the Gallatin, a new supervisor was appointed, and he had a meeting about a timber sale, what they call a team meeting. And they start off the meeting and say, okay, we're going to tell the public this timber sale is good for wildlife. And she raised her hand and said, but it isn't. He immediately canceled the meeting. It was on a Friday afternoon. Monday morning, she showed up for work, and her job had been eliminated.
Oh, wow.
And what she told me is to get to be a ranger, a field officer, a ranger or a supervisor, I'm sorry, you have to demonstrate that you're going to get the cutout. And so, as you started off, I've been executive director for Alliance for the Wild Rockies for 23 years, and I've never met a supervisor who isn't determined to get the cut out.
So, what is the basis of your lawsuits? Are you filing in regard to endangered species or specific species or habitat?
Well, our mission is to protect habitat for native species. But because we can't sue on everything because we're so small, we focus based on triage. And so we try and focus on the habitat first for threatened species and then sensitive species like the goshawk or the pinyon jay or sage grouse. species that are in decline that really should be protected rather than invasive species that are.
Most of your suits are in Montana, right?
Most are in Montana, but you know, as we talked about, we just filed a suit in southeast Idaho. We recently filed a suit in southern Utah in the Montana LaSalle National Forest, and you know, we have an ongoing lawsuit in the Selkirks that we talked about earlier.
You had a suit in the Garnet Mountain Range. Tell us about that.
The BLM. So that is one place where it's lynx habitat. Grizzly bears, you know, are migrating south, trying to reconnect with the Yellowstone grizzly bear population, and most of them are coming through the Garnet Range.
Uh-huh.
And the BLM wants to build a bunch of roads and have a bunch of clear cuts, which will result in destroying the habitat for lynx and result in more dead grizzly bears. And that lawsuit we filed last year, we just filed our opening brief.
Uh-huh.
So the government then gets the file a reply brief, we then file a reply to their reply, and then the government gets the final reply to the brief. And then if the court wants to, they can schedule oral argument and then make a decision at some point after that. So these all take a long time.
Well, Mike, we've run out our half hour, so we have a lot more to talk about. So perhaps next week we can do another half hour. So thanks very much for talking with us today. Our guest today has been Michael Garrity, Executive Director for the Alliance for the Wild Rockies, based in Helena, Montana. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. More information about the association and its activities can be found on its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.